You know, there are few health concerns scarier to consider than dementia. And for many of us, the thought of losing, you know, the thought of losing your ability to remember and to think clearly, that's a terrifying thought. But there are Wisconsin researchers hard at work to find out how we can treat and possibly prevent memory loss. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today. We're lucky to have Dr. Nathaniel Chen as our guest. He's a geriatrician, memory clinic doctor, medical director for the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, and he's the host of the Dementia Matters podcast, which explores the treatment and care of people living with dementia. So as we talk with Dr. Chen, I hope you'll join in. What are your questions about risks for Alzheimer's disease and dementia? Maybe it runs in your family. Are you worried you may receive a diagnosis later in life? Or what are you wondering about how you can prepare? Number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Nathaniel Chen, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
There's a lot we do not know about the cause of dementia, but what are the primary risk factors for memory loss later in life?
Well, Larry, first, the most common brain diseases that cause dementia are going to be Alzheimer's disease, vascular disease, Parkinson's disease, a cousin of it called Lewy body disease, and then frontal temporal disease. But those are all accumulations of proteins in the brain or blood vessel narrowing. And then when we think of other factors below the head that can affect our thinking, that's going to be things like our mood, sleep apnea, physical inactivity, thyroid conditions, vitamin deficiencies. So there's a whole bunch of things that we can address that can actually affect our thinking ability.
Are there some, there have to be some common myths about dementia?
Yes. The most common is that it's a normal part of aging, and it is not a normal part of aging. There are plenty of people who live a really long and healthy life that never develop advanced thinking changes. I use the word advanced because we do see thinking changes as we get older. We call those age-related thinking changes. But dementia is not something that has to happen. And certainly that's why we are so focused on trying to treat it and then ultimately prevent it.
And Alzheimer's probably the most commonly understood or known, I should say, cause of dementia. What changes are happening in the brain when you develop Alzheimer's?
In Alzheimer's disease, there is this accumulation of two proteins that we are not able to get rid of. The first one is called amyloid, and that develops first. The second one, which develops years later, is called the tau protein. And those two proteins lead to dysfunction in the connections among brain cells and then eventually lead to brain cell death. And when you don't have as many brain cells, you don't have the communication, and therefore you start having symptoms. And so we really learn this timeline or this progression of Alzheimer's because of our research participants. And in particular in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Registry for Alzheimer's Prevention, there are 1,800 fantastic Wisconsin people who are followed every other year for over 20 years. And we're really learning a lot because of their dedication.
Oh, that's wonderful. Preventable. You mentioned preventable. How preventable is dementia?
Well, there's good evidence that between 30 and 40% of dementia cases are preventable. Now, I'm not saying Alzheimer's disease here. I'm saying dementia, the ultimate,
right,
the big umbrella. But about 40% is a number that's commonly used in the field.
Boy. And what about actions? What actions can you take to reduce the risk of dementia? And is there anything relating to reducing the Alzheimer's disease for yourself?
Well, I'll answer the second question by saying we're really looking into that. What can we do that impacts this amyloid protein or the tau protein? But really, when it comes to dementia itself, you know, I think of it as four main things about how can we address or how do we look at prevention. The first one is looking at things like depression, your thyroid, vitamin deficiencies. This is the reason why people really should go and talk to their primary care provider and get evaluated, because they're very common and they can be treated. But the other things are looking at vascular risk factors, so blood vessel health. And so that's things like diabetes or your blood sugar, high blood pressure, if you're smoking, obesity, just weight in general, and then physical inactivity. Those are all been linked to having a higher risk of dementia, and they're all very treatable. But then there are other things that I like to think about that are more pro-health or pro-well-being, and that's exercising, eating well, being social, keeping your brain stimulated. And then the last thing there I would tell you is we really have to protect our brain. So that's wearing a helmet, wearing a seatbelt, so any preventing head injuries. And then more recently, which has been covered by WPR, hearing loss and making sure that we're identifying and treating hearing loss.
You know, let's say there's somebody out there listening and 60 years old and says, you know what, I don't do exercises. I don't eat right. Probably too late for me anyway. Or is it?
Absolutely not. It's never too late. It's always a good place to start is today. And I would actually say when people tell me, oh, I don't exercise, I don't eat well, all I say is, well, great. We have this huge room for improvement. And so I just want you to walk then. If you're not ready to go for a swim or go on the elliptical machine, then please give me 5 minutes of walking. And on days like today and yesterday, there's really no excuse, right? Or if you can't walk, and there are plenty of people who have those disabilities, then let's do some chair exercises. So there's always a way, Larry.
Elena DePere has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, this is Elaine.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I already told the other gal, but when I was 79, I'd been falling, and the EMTs had to come pick me up, and I'm a little overweight. Anyway, my kids took me to a neurologist. I'd never been to one. And after they gave me some tests and this and that, the doctor told them she is not to be left alone. She needs special care. I was in a wheelchair. But then he did some blood tests. And he found out that my B12 essence, there hardly was any. So he put me on shots. I had 2 a month for 3 months and then 1 a month. And then when I saw him a year later, I got, instead of 18 out of 30, I got 29 out of 30. I could sit down, put my arms out, and stand up. I had not been in a wheelchair. I had not called the EMTs for 7 or 8 months.
Wow, that is, that's something, B12. And Dr. Chin, that sounds like it worked in Elaine's case. Is that something that?
This is a great story. And Elaine, thank you for sharing it because it shows the importance of looking for other factors. Everyone always thinks it's Alzheimer's and it's not always Alzheimer's. And so B12 is one that we look for. Vitamin D, vitamin B6, vitamin B1. These are all vitamin levels that if really low, like in Elaine's case, can cause symptoms. And when we treat them, people can, I don't promise it, but people can feel better. And when Elaine had repeat testing, she performed better. So I'm really happy to hear that story, Elaine, and I'm glad that that level was checked.
Yeah, and that would be something that I guess if you were suspecting that in maybe in yourself or maybe in a loved one, that would be something you would ask if you went to see the doctor? Ask
that
for?
That is true. Yep, Larry, that's true. And I would say all primary care doctors know to check a B12 in someone who feels like they're having memory changes. Now, in Elaine's case, she was also having balance changes. And so the neurologist knew that for balance. But primary care doctors are very capable of addressing a lot of the reversible factors and doing a very good screen to look for possible causes of a person having thinking changes.
And I would think, you know, your doctor that you see all the time, your doctor should be in a good position knowing you to help you with dementia prevention.
I agree completely, Larry. They know their patients the best. They know their histories the best. And ideally, they have the best rapport with their patients so they can talk about memory changes. You know, there's a lot of stigma, Larry, to a person experiencing or worrying about memory loss. And your primary knows you, and hopefully you have that trusting relationship where you can start the conversation.
And so if you notice symptoms, I mean, first, you know, I have been I'm known to look for my glasses when they're on top of my head. If you start to, what are some signs that you yourself can sort of self-diagnose, to at least to begin with?
Well, Larry, I'd never encourage self-diagnosis, but I appreciate your question of where, you know, what are the earliest changes or what should you do? And I would say, you know, if you are noticing something and it's persistent and it is starting to get in the way of your ability to not only enjoy your day, but just get through the day, if it's impacting your day-to-day function, that is certainly something that you might want to ask your loved one or your close friend about. Do you notice this change? Maybe they don't. And if they do, or if you're still worried, despite what them trying to reassure you, then I think it's worth going in to talk to your primary care and say, listen, I would like to be at least briefly assessed for this and see what you find.
Dr. Nathaniel Chin, our guest today, geriatrician, memory clinic doctor. It's great to have him with us, and he'll be with us till 12:30 today, and you'll have a chance to answer or ask your questions as well. Take a quick look at the news, and we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for spending some of your day with us here on WPR. We're talking about dementia on the show right now with our guest, Dr. Nathaniel Chin, a geriatrician, a memory clinic doctor, medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, and host of the Dementia Matters podcast. It explores the treatment and care of people living with dementia. So tell us what you're doing to keep your brain and memory healthy. What do you want to know about the latest in dementia research? Give us a call. Number's 800-642-1234. Send an email otherwise to ideas@WPR.org. And let's take a call from Bob in Mount Horeb next. Bob, hi.
Yeah, thank you so much for this program. I'm aware of the connection between hearing loss and dementia. And my mom has recently been diagnosed, and she has severe hearing loss. And I'm worried that any hearing aid is going to be too difficult for her to operate and maintain. She scored a 16 on the mental status exam. Are there hearing aids that, I'm sorry about the wind, are there hearing aids that would help in this situation?
Dr.
That
Chin?
Is an excellent, yeah, that's an excellent question, and an unfortunate situation, but one that is still feasible. So I would say that there are hearing aids that are simpler that people can use. I would also say there are these devices called pocket talkers that we in the geriatric clinics use frequently. And so it's very much like a Walkman, where it has a headset and it's connected to a little device with a little microphone at the end. And people use that in more intimate gatherings and small conversations where it amplifies the sound. In fact, people with hearing aids will sometimes use a pocket talker when they have severe hearing loss. And so I would say that that would be worth trying, or working with a hearing specialist in seeing for the simpler hearing aids to see if that would be beneficial for Bob's mom.
Yeah. Bob, thank you. Jenny in Elkhorn has a question relating to this in a way. She's been having difficulties with her primary care doc about hearing loss and possible dementia. Wonders, how can you navigate communicating with a doctor who doesn't seem to listen to your concerns?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. And I guess I would start by saying, you know, it starts with the advocating for yourself and asking for the referral. There are many memory clinics across the state through the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute. We have many clinics that are primary care driven, but have the specialty focus of memory. And so you could ask for that referral. You could reach out yourself. Or I would say having a very heartfelt one-on-one conversation with that primary care doctor to express your concern and why you are concerned, and asking directly for a thorough evaluation.
If you notice common symptoms or notice symptoms of dementia, just reaching out for support. What are your tips for finding a good doctor to find answers about your memory loss?
Well, I would start with your primary care, but I would say in the state of Wisconsin, each of our aging and disability resource centers has what's called a dementia specialist or dementia care specialist. And that is usually someone with a lot of medical background, but also special training who can help you find memory care providers. You could also go to the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute website and look for our network. I mean, these are multiple, it is not UW specific, multiple health systems where people are leading memory clinics. And so through those connections, you would be able to find someone in your area or at least within driving distance.
You know, last month, I think it was, there was a study funded by the National Institute of Aging that found a link between living in a disadvantaged neighborhood and lower cognitive test scores. Can you tell us about how our environment is related to our brain and memory health?
Yeah, this was a very interesting study, and it was actually using a tool that was designed and created by one of our own, our geriatrician, Dr. Amy Kine. It's called the Neighborhood Atlas, which is free for anyone. You could go online and look at it. And it's really looking at environmental social factors in your neighborhood. So using block census data that's publicly available. And what this particular study found was that it was looking at both race and area deprivation index. And what it found was that regardless of race, if you live in a more disadvantaged neighborhood, you perform worse on thinking tests. And they accounted for education, for some genetics, other health factors. And so it really speaks to the fact that when it comes to our thinking ability, there are other external factors at play that we can address. And a lot of this is policy driven, but a lot of it is under our own control, whether it's the foods that we eat or how active we are. But studies like this one, and using the tool, this Neighborhood Atlas, is really allowing for not only scientists, but I would say the public policymakers to see that there are other things that we can do outside of a clinic that can make a meaningful benefit to the community.
Yeah. Jim in La Crosse, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling, Jim.
Yeah. Hi. I'm dealing with a person who's extremely, extremely hostile to the idea of discussing what possibly may be some disability in thinking. What do I do then?
Yeah, so you're not alone in this, Jim. You know, there's because there's so much stigma and fear that most people will become defensive, and that's in addition to denial about what they're experiencing. And so, this is not evidence based, Jim. So, in my experience, approaching that person, and I'm presuming in this situation, this is a loved one or someone you care about, and saying, I am worried for these reasons. I want to be there for you for these reasons, but I need to know what we're dealing with and what we're looking at. And for me to best do that, it would be looking to get an evaluation so that I can be the best partner for you or family member or friend. And therefore, are you willing to go in with me to talk to this provider, to look for reversible factors first? And if it's not that, then we'll face this journey together and I will be there with you. But I need to know what's happening in order to do that.
Yeah. Jim, thank you for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. What role does mental health and emotional well-being play in terms of risk of dementia later in life?
Well, depression is one of the main risk factors, one of the most powerful risk factors for dementia later in life. Also, what's tricky about this is that mood changes could actually be one of the first changes of an actual disease in the brain. And so there's a lot of research looking at that. So they're intertwined, which to me just says it's incredibly important that we address our mental well-being as well as our physical well-being. And likely the outcome of doing that is going to be not only feeling better, but then protecting our brain.
Yeah, and I'm thinking too about chronic stress, anxiety. This has got to affect risks for dementia.
You're preaching to the choir here, Larry. I feel it, and I agree with you completely. And when you are chronically stressed, now stress in general is not a bad thing. It's what prompts us to get things done evolutionarily. It's what prompted us to run away from that attack. But when it's chronic and daily from the lives that we're living, you're having too much cortisol in your body. You're having too much of this sympathetic nervous system drive. And that is leading to negative outcomes, blood vessel health, brain sizes becoming a little bit smaller, obesity, high blood pressure. So there's lots of negative effects from the way that our society just lives in general when we have chronic stress that we don't address.
Yeah. You had this research, Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. What research are you focusing on?
Well, our program, we're one of 37 nationally funded centers in Alzheimer's and related causes of dementia. And we happen to be focused on what's called, three things. One is preclinical, meaning individuals at risk of developing thinking changes who currently feel okay. So we want people to come in as early as possible so that we can really understand their experience and then watch them as they get older. The second is what we call biomarker research. So we're very interested in lumbar punctures, PET scans, blood tests, even finger stick blood tests, looking to understand the proteins that build up and how can we better identify things as people are getting older. And then our third area is looking at representation and the need to improve our racial understanding of Alzheimer's disease. So bringing in communities of color, communities from different areas, rural communities, veterans, so that we can understand the biology of Alzheimer's in all people and not just in a certain segment.
Yeah. Carol in Green Bay has a question for you. Carol, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, guest. This is just a quick question about, you know, I do wish sometimes when it came to tests, medical tests, that I couldn't see the report. Because a lot of times it's more upsetting, I think, than it needs to be. I'll see my neurologist again in another month. But here's the thing. I have multiple sclerosis, so that's why I get these once a year, full set of MRIs from my brain through my lumbar. At this last one, with my brain, it's indicating a thinning and attenuation of the corpus callosum. And I'm 65. Can you tell me if that's like a normal thing with aging? I mean, I certainly feel like I'm still sharp.
Well, Carol, first of all, I'm glad you're still feeling like you're sharp because that's really the most important.
You sound pretty sharp too, by the way.
The second thing is you're not the only one who wishes that we could withhold some of the labs just temporarily or the imaging findings temporarily so that I could then or the doctors could actually reach out and talk to people about it because it is a lot of medical jargon. And the third is, you know, while I can't speak specifically to that scan, you know, that isn't an area that I look to when I think about memory change. And so that might be related to what the neurologist is looking at related to your multiple sclerosis. But that doesn't, to me, jump out as an area that would initially concern me when it comes to thinking ability. But again, I'll go back to point number one. Sure, you sure sounds sharp. And so as long as you're feeling good, that's a really good sign.
Yeah. Thank you, Carol. Rick in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi. There seems to be a lot of controversy and contradicting opinions about supplements, and I'm wondering what your opinion is of supplements that are supposed to enhance memory and cognitive function. Specifically, I take ginkgo biloba and phosphatidylsterine, I think it's pronounced. And I'm wondering if you think it's just a big waste of money or what your opinion is of that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great question. It's one I get a lot when I talk to communities. There is a great debate about supplements. And the reason is that there's not a lot of evidence to support supplements when a person is not deficient in a vitamin. So we heard earlier that when someone's B12 deficient, you certainly want to be on a B12 supplement. But when someone tests in a normal level, there's no scientific study to support that a person is going to do better or feel better on the supplement. Now, on the other side of that, just because there isn't a study doesn't mean that a person may not feel better being on a certain thing like the one that you're on with ginkgo. And I believe there was a study on ginkgo, and it's unclear to me, I'm sorry, what the actual result was. But even if it was negative, if a person feels better on it, I never tell them to stop. I just tell them I don't know that the evidence is there to support the use of it. But I think it's more important to talk about it because, frankly, if it interacts with a prescription medication, that could have a side effect that makes you feel worse, and we want to make sure that doesn't happen. And frankly, you know, we just want to be upfront with each other about what we're taking, what we're comfortable taking. I would say there are a lot of supplements out there that specifically target brain health. And I'm not going to list any names in the show, but if they say this promotes your memory, there's really no evidence for those in particular. And it really just is a combination of parts of supplements that go into one pill, and they're very expensive. So in that regard, I do worry about the cost of medication of these supplements, and the limited to no benefit from receiving them.
Yeah. Rick, thank you so much. On the other hand, there are some pills, not supplements, but Donepezil comes to mind, that when you're looking at early stage Alzheimer's, at least, there can be positive effects. Certainly, I have a sister who's early stage Alzheimer's, and the Donepezil has made a very big difference in the quality of her life.
Well, and that is one that we do prescribe, and what it does is it blocks the natural breakdown of a chemical signal in your brain that helps you with your memory and your attention. So it doesn't create it, and it naturally, your body will still break it down at some point. But this idea that let's promote more of the signal and healthy brain cells will take it up and use it, which is why it is used in individuals with mild all the way to moderate and severe stage dementia. And some people with mild cognitive impairment may talk to their provider about it as well. But it can have its place. I mean, some people don't benefit at all, Larry, and they will report that to me. And other people have side effects and they can't be on it. But the field certainly hasn't had a lot of drugs, oral pill drugs, since 2003, 2004. And so there's been this dearth of medications for people. Donepezil remains very commonly used.
Yeah. Well, it made a big difference, and it was making a big difference in her life. And certainly her attitude and outlook is much improved. William in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, William.
Hi, this is William Chase. I was calling regarding, I read somewhere that if you don't get enough sleep, there's plaque that builds up on your brain. And if you get a deep sleep, then there's enzymes that wash away the plaque that causes dementia. Is that true? Or I don't know if something that I read that was wrong.
No, so sleep is incredibly important. So that is very true. Sleep, people who sleep better, I should say people who don't sleep well, don't perform as well on thinking tests. They have higher weights, higher blood pressure, lower moods. And so sleep is really important just for your overall well-being. But in addition to that, when it comes to Alzheimer's disease specifically, we have seen that the amyloid plaques, that first protein, gets cleared normally during the deep phase of your sleep, so stage three sleep. And so people who never get into stage three or deep sleep, or they don't do it enough, there's this belief that then the protein isn't being cleared out at the way it should, and so then can sort of build up and stay in the brain. So we do see this as a risk factor to Alzheimer's disease, or at least the biology of Alzheimer's, but really we're still looking into it directly to see if there's a way for us to use this to treat, prevent, or address Alzheimer's disease.
William, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Dan in Westby. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Dan Small here. I heard part of your conversation about the connection between hearing loss and dementia. And I recently, finally, after many years of having poor hearing, started working with a clinic that's called Professional Hearing Care, LLC. They have offices in Fitchburg and here in Westby and La Crosse and Mauston as well. And they very clearly show the connection between improving hearing ability with a prescription hearing aid, not just over-the-counter hearing aid, and reducing the decline of cognitive ability toward dementia. It's they do occasionally symposiums around the state, and they do a free. I think most audiologists do, but they will offer a free exam so you can not only learn what your hearing ability is, but what your cognitive function is, and then you can learn about improving the connection between the two. I don't want to lose what little cognitive function I have left. And you and I are in that same generation, I think. Yeah. I'm wearing hearing aids now, and it's helped a lot.
Yeah. Dan, thank you so much for calling. A comment, Dr. Chen.
Well, I think Dan speaks to the fact that it's not just about thinking, it's about your quality of life. But certainly when you can hear, you can focus, and that helps with learning and memory and just overall thinking ability. It also helps with socialization, your willingness to engage and be stimulated. I do want to clarify, though, there aren't any clinical trials yet to date that have shown that wearing a hearing aid, you know, actually reduces the risk directly of developing dementia. There is a really good study out that I talked about on a WPR show where there could be a signal in those at the highest risk who had a lot of vascular risk factors. But we do need more scientific studies before we can say conclusively that putting a hearing aid will reduce your risk of thinking change. But for Dan's sake, you know, he noticed this difference. And so I think that's very valuable. And I think a lot of people will feel that way. But I just want to make sure people know we don't yet have the solid evidence base to say that for everybody.
Yeah. Dan, thank you again for calling. You host, Dr. Chen, the Dementia Matters podcast, and maybe tell us about that.
Well, thank you, Larry. Yes, it's one of the highlights of my job. I love seeing patients. I love working with researchers, but I certainly love talking to the community, and the podcast is a way to do that. I record about 20 to 30 minute segments with researchers across the world, really, and then actually participants now too, and other specialists in caregiving. And the point of it really is to share information in meaningful and digestible ways to the public so that they know what science is doing, what researchers are doing, but other tips to not only stay healthy, but to provide the best care for their loved one or their friend. And so it's a great joy. I meet with a lot of different people, and we have an episode come out every other week, and we work with other institutions, including other federally funded people. And the idea just being, we all have concerns, we all have skin in this game. And so if we can share the information that's evidence-based, that's reliable, then more people can listen and ideally break down the stigma of thinking changes.
And it's Dementia Matters. That's the name of your
right.
Dr. Chen, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. I hope we can do this again. There's lots more we could be covering here. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I've had a great time.
Dr. Nathaniel Chen, geriatrician, memory clinic doctor, and director, medical director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Research Center. Great to have him with us. Looking ahead, tomorrow is our sports show, our monthly sports show. And among other things, we'll be looking at those NCAA brackets for the tournaments. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.